Love music? Love the idea of the week? Well, you're in the right place. This is Music Weekly from Guardian.co.uk. I'm Paul McInnes, and on this week's show, we'll be talking to the mighty, mighty Pet Shop Boys about the enduring power of pop. We'll have new music from The Enemy, Theophilus London and Jack Pignatte. We'll be taking a tour down the Blue Nile in the feature with no name. Of course, we'll have the best of your face back, but we're going to start by passing a short spell with Karen Dreyer, aka Fever Ray. The sound of Karen Dreyer, one half of The Knife, and one whole of Fever Ray, whose music we've reviewed and raved about on this pod before. Raver in chief, as always, was Ms. Rosie Swash. Hello, Rosie. Good to have you back.
Thank you very much.
Are you fully restored?
Yes, indeed, I am.
Good, good. Now, let's talk about Karen Dreyer.
Okay.
Why is she different?
For a start, most people don't know what she looks like. She never performs without a mask on. I don't think she's ever appeared in any of their videos for any of their songs. And they're not exactly a prolific band. They've been around for about 10 years, been making music, and they've only had a couple of albums out. And she's really willfully shuns the limelight, more so than her brother, who's also in The Knife. She barely does interviews. Her whole approach to music is at odds with sort of most female musicians these days. But musically, with Fever Ray and with The Knife, the music that she produces incredibly evocative. It's occasionally quite harrowing, I think, to listen to. It kind of plays around with syncopated beats and percussion and techno, and it's very weird, and it doesn't really sound like anything else. But the album that she's made at the moment is very similar to the stuff that she's made with The Knife, so it was kind of up to her when we met to explain, first of all, why she decided to make a solo record.
See what happened, because I had been working with my brother for so many years, and I went into the studio in September 2007. It took about a year to finish the album.
There's a line on the album which has really stayed with me, which is, I put myself into what I do, and I wondered whether that line is reflected of the way that you make music, the process of writing and recording an album. Do you really sort of immerse yourself into that?
Yes. I think it's very important that you do things when you work with music and art and things that it's like seriously. When I start with a project, it takes all my time.
I remember that you saying before that you were hugely into metal when you were growing up. That was the sort of music of your adolescence.
Yeah, I had some time when I only listened to like Guns N' Roses and Mötley Crüe, and not like sleaze metal, but not so heavy. It was more about the clothes, and it was very stylish. But I still like Appetite for Destruction, that album.
Sound-wise, if you're a fan of The Knife, then you're going to get something that stems from that in Fever Ray.
I think it relates more to what I've done before than it differs. I continued working with the Fever A after I finished the Silent Shout album. So it's just an ongoing process.
And does the ongoing process mean that there'll be another Knife album in the pipeline at some point?
Yes, first we are now working with making music for an opera, and it will have premiere in September, and we've said that after that we will probably start working on an album.
You're writing the opera from scratch, from beginning?
It's a Danish theatre company who asked us if we wanted to write music for an opera about Charles Darwin. And they asked us a year ago, so we have been working on it for a while now. So we write libretto and we write the music.
So it's about Charles Darwin's life then, his life and work?
I would say it definitely has elements of his life in it, but it will be very, very free, I think. And it will also focus on the process of writing The Origin of the Species.
Was Carandrea, and Fever A by Fever A is out now.
Thanks, Rosie. Before we go any further, Rosie, I have some bad news for you.
What?
We're going to have a funeral. Funeral in the pod.
Why?
For our old theme music.
I see.
That's the sound of the old theme music, which kind of gave us an abiding cool, but we've decided that that moment has now passed. And we're going to go into the future. We've contracted out. It's been a laborious bidding process. And we've got a new tune. And it sounds a little bit like this. So how indie is that? It's a little bit... It already sounds a little bit out of date, doesn't it? A little bit post-punk.
So cool.
Yeah. But that'll be our new music from next week. So look forward to that. But no time to dwell on our... amazing achievement, because let's go for Singles Club now. In fact, the only thing more exciting than a new theme tune could be the fact that we might be joined by Observer Music Monthly's Luke Bainbridge, and lo and behold, here he is.
Hello.
How are you, Luke? You good?
Not bad at all.
Good. You have obviously been working yourself to the bone on this mammoth Thousand Songs project.
Oh, just a bit. Thousand Songs I never want to hear again, as I affectionately call it. But no, it's going to be fantastic.
Good. Well, we'll talk a little bit more about it after we've reviewed some music. But let's get into the tunes now. We're going to start with Theophilus London, and this is Ultraviolet. No, you don't have to go, tonight you stay. No, you don't have to go, tonight you stay. They say that life will never end. I hear it time and time again. They say that life will never end. I hear it time and time again. Okay, that was Ultraviolet by Theophilus London. And Theophilus London is a rapper who hails from Brooklyn and, as such, is unlikely to have taken his name from the 1980s Lenny Henry character Theophilus P. Wildebeest. That said, he does sample 80s soul and electro extensively in his current mixtape, This Charming Mixtape, so maybe he came across some Wildebeest in the process, as well as some Smiths. Rosie,
yes,
your choice.
It is. I went to New York recently.
Oh,
and
didn't you?
The Fader, who I've said before, I'm a fan of the magazine and the website, they run a radio show every Friday night in the East Village, and you can kind of just wander in off the street and have a beer and watch them while they're recording it. It's really fun. And this guy came down and did a live MC bit for some of the show, and at first it was a bit hazy when I got into it, and then they suddenly played this and he rapped while he was there, and I just thought it was brilliant. I've listened to the rest of his stuff on MySpace, and it's all completely different. Like, he does a sort of piss take of the Crazy Cousins bongo song, you know, I love to play my bongos in the morning, and it's really good. They all sound very different, and you don't usually hear Brooklyn rappers taking their cues from Joy Division bass lines and you know, Prince vocals and running with it. And it's really rough around the edges. The demo's not great on there, but you can imagine if it was produced in the right way and arranged properly, it could be a really brilliant tune.
One of the things people have said about him, and you can kind of pick up from what you're saying there about the Joy Division and other stuff, is that his references are very direct.
Mm.
So the mixtape is him completely mocking up an Elvis Costello album cover and stuff. Do you think he's maybe ripping off a little bit too cleanly?
No, I don't think so. I think the final output of what he's making is so different from all these artists, but also touches on what you can identify with them. He's kind of, I guess it's his way of saying, I'm a bit different. I'm a kind of like post Kanye West styled rapper. You can't just put me in a Brooklyn MC box and think you know where I'm coming from. And it's just a slightly different kind of way of making hip hop.
Cool. I like the synths on this, Luke. Do you?
I think it's really interesting. And he certainly looks really cool in the sort of way that you can in Brooklyn or the East End of London or possibly Manchester's Northern Quarter. And he seems to have quite a nice sort of palette, nice range of influences in this sort of post-New Wave world, from Joy Division, as you said, to sort of even some new romantic influences. So I find it really interesting, but there's not really a song there for me.
Mm-hmm.
I think he could just do with writing some songs.
It does kind of noodle around a little bit, and actually in this track, while he is a good MC, and you hear that on the mixtape, he doesn't really rap so much as master of ceremony.
Yeah, exactly.
And give it a bit of Pharrell Williams yelping as well.
That's what I mean by it being rough around the edges. You kind of, it's nearly there, and you think he's still really young and obviously all that sort of stuff, but you just think with a little bit of help from the right people, he could be a total star, and this could be an absolutely amazing song.
Okay, this charming mixtape by Theophilus London is available to download on his MySpace now. Second track on Singles Club is No Time for Tears by The Enemy. Okay, that was No Time for Tears by The Enemy. The Enemy are the most famous thing to emerge from Coventry since that bloke who ran that double glazing company and had a reality show on BBC Two, which is actually pretty good. Perhaps unrelated to their place of birth, The Enemy are quite an angry band and stirred up a generation of teenagers to get angry about stuff with their 2007 debut, This Sounds Like a Bit Like The Jam. Sorry, it's called We Live and Die in These Towns. Luke, this is your choice.
It is my choice. They're not necessarily my band. I'm not like a huge, huge fan, but I've heard the album and I do think it's going to be really, really big. I mean, for three quite diminutive chaps, they made a really big sounding record, and I think it's going to strike a chord with a lot of people. I think they already have anyway, but I think even more so this year. I mean, their first album was kind of much maligned for being a bit meat and potatoes rock, but I think they've gone for a bigger sound and expanded their influences here. And I think they do two things which not many of their peers are doing. I think they do try and address the current sort of economic situation with lyrics talking about the daily grind and the struggle in dead-end jobs, etc., which is inevitably going to strike a chord with people increasingly so. And the other thing they do is they're not afraid to try and write quite basic but anthemic sing-along choruses, which a lot of their peers seem to shy away from. That's really going to strike a chord with people this year, and I think this record's going to be really big.
Yeah, I've seen them live a couple of times, and they have a real direct bond with their crowd. And I think that is partly because they are very sincere about what they're doing, and it's not trite either. And it certainly these kind of, we've got to get out of this place, we've got to go and break away from this dead-end existence, classic rock expressions, but they do. They are sincere when they write about it. Rosie, what's your thought on this?
Well, I was very surprised when I listened to it. I just thought, I'm not going to like this. They're not the band for me. And those opening bits where he sings The Morning After the Revolution, I just thought, whoa, it wasn't what I was expecting at all. And I really like those opening bars that, really gets the sound of grindingness in it. But when it gets to the core, when it gets to We've Got to Get Out of the City, I just think it's going for this kind of populist anthem chorus, and that's not something I particularly like about them. And I think maybe it would have been quite brave if they'd stuck with the sound that the song has right at the beginning. It kind of gets to be a little bit Kasabian towards the end. But when they first came about, I was, you know, probably a bit of a snob about it and thought, oh, it's not for me. And there's something really sincere about them, which I think you get in this. And they're definitely a lot more interesting than some of the other meat and potatoes rock.
Is the rest of the album along a similar line musically, or is it...?
Very much so, yeah. And it's those anthemic sing-along choruses, which I really think are going to strike a chord. I mean, they're playing those huge gigs with Oasis, aren't they, this summer at Wembley and at Heaton Park in Manchester. And I think that is where it's really going to perhaps move up to another level for them.
OK, well, we shall wait and see what happens to The Enemy. But No Time for Tears is streaming on their MySpace now and it's out on release on April the 13th. Final track on Singles Club is Tonight Today by Jack Pignatte. I'm in a pain. Jack Pignatte with Tonight Today. Widely known as Jack Peanut. Okay, that's just me then. Jack Pignatte is another cat who had a debut in 2007 and, like The Enemy, got a little bit of mockery in the process, most notably in that LDN is a victim thing, which itself wasn't much cop. Anyway, he's back with a new direction and he also appears to have stopped dressing like Bruce Springsteen at a jumble sale. He's got himself a smart tweed coat, which will be ideal for spring. This is my choice. I like this song. I do like this song. It's got into my head and it stayed there despite an initial resistance on my part, not only because I would have to stop calling him Peanut if I liked it. It's got this Afropop thing going on in it, which is, you know, was kind of the flavour of the month last year. But it strikes me as a little bit looser than a lot of Vampire Weekends or Foals and things like that. And it's got a real groove to it. And I think that's largely down to producer Paul Epworth, who's given it a real dance floor feel. But there's lots of nice touches in it. I think he delivers the vocals well. There's some nice little images in there, even though some of the lyrics are clunky, but some of the other ones, he describes himself as a zombie at some point, which may or may not be a failure reference. I don't know. But it's evocative in its own way, and most of all, it's danceable. Rosie.
I like this a lot. It's obviously, again, it's a departure from the stuff we did the first time round, and I'm glad. I think the, you know, limits of the sort of Teddy Boy skiffled, you know, stuff that he was doing before would have been exceeded had he tried to do it again. And to me, it sounds like a sort of, it's a really lovely song. It's really, there's something really gentle about it. And it sounds kind of like a low-key funky house, like really low-key funky house song, to the point where when he first comes in, because he also sings in a slightly different register and he's lost that affectation that he had, which was a little bit annoying, and he's kind of sounds a bit more natural.
Not entirely.
Not entirely, but right at the beginning when he comes in, it doesn't even sound like it's him. You almost think that's a sample that he's about to sing over or something like that. So, you know, he always sort of sat between Jamie T on one side and then Mr. Hudson on the and the library on the other, and I think he's just done his own thing with this one, so it's good.
My one worry from a cynical point of view is that maybe this is slightly too showy, too obviously a remake of an artist, and too obviously a new direction. Luke, what do you think of it?
I'd echo slightly what you were both saying, is that it's obviously a departure. I wasn't a massive fan of the first album, to be honest with you, but I do quite like this, and it has got that slightly sort of baggier groove, but sort of a slightly more Balearic groove that really, really works, I think. And you can see it's got a sort of slight Carnival vibe, and you can see it being quite a sort of early summer record and being perhaps a bit of a hit at the festivals. I'd like to hear more of the new material, actually.
Yeah, well, sadly, that's all we've got of it for now. But I'm sure there will be more forthcoming when the record company decides to judiciously leak it onto the internet. Tonight's Today is out on March the 30th, however, so you can get that yourself then, and obviously it's on the MySpaces and stuff right now. Right, last week we reviewed Heads Will Roll, a new track from the Yeah Yeah Yeahs. Heads were divided in the pod on whether it was any good or not, but on the blog you were unified. Ind Rossi said the YYY sound like they've pandered to all that unfounded criticism that their last record got. Show Your Bones, I feel, was a fantastic album. Much more substance lyrically, songwriting and in production. This sounds like a real step backwards.
Rockwatcher said, should the Yeah Yeah Yeahs have gone dance? Nah, they should have just gone.
Building58.com said, are music journalists still trying to make a star of Karen O? ? This has been going on for about 6 years now, and after the release of the first album, that wasn't particularly brilliant, nor has anything else they've released. Yet still you hope to have Karen O become some superstar. Nice work there, building58.com. Of course, we want your views on this week's tracks and any crazy music journalist conspiracies you've got bouncing around your noggin too. Post them on the blog at guardian.co.uk/musicweekly. We want your thoughts on Theophilus, Jack and the Enemy and these other tracks that are out to buy next week. Look out! Cause I'm just too fake for the world. Haki, too fake. I'm just too fake, you see. I wish I didn't have to be, but watch out. Let it all figured out. Wish you loved me with a broken heart. Lil Wayne, Prom Queen. Nobody can judge us if we choose to face it gradually. Future of the Left, the hope that house builds. Makes everything right. Nothing can be us. Wakes up, happy up here. Right, thanks to Luke. Thank you so much for coming in today, Luke. And tell us more about this massive endeavour, which seems to be pretty much akin to crafting the Elgin marbles with your own teeth.
Yeah, it's 1,000 songs that everyone must hear. A week-long series of supplements starting in The Guardian this Saturday and running right through on The Observer on Sunday and then right through to Friday. And what we decided to do, I think we wanted to, it's not 1,000 greatest songs. What we wanted to do is reflect, I think, the change in listening culture since the rise of the MP3 player. I think we're all getting accustomed to listening to music in a different way. People don't necessarily listen to albums as much, they listen to individual tracks, and people are increasingly sorting their list, their music into playlists. You know, a decade ago, before the birth of the MP3 player, people might have had albums on their shelves by 30 artists, perhaps your average listener. Now they have a little box in their pocket which has 300 or 3,000 artists on. So we wanted to reflect that, really. I think that broadening of taste can only be a good thing, but you need perhaps a helping hand
indeed,
forest, which is what this should be, hopefully.
Thank you very much, Luke, for coming in. OK, no time to pause, no time to catch breath, because it's time for our main guest this week. It's an honour. It's a privilege. It's the Pet Shop Boys. The inimitable sound of the Pet Shop Boys, who have made bespoke boutique pop for 25 years, and whose influence is so great, they made Brandon Flowers buy his first CD, rather than steal it, presumably. Neil Tennant and Chris Lowe are about to release their 10th studio album, Yes, on the back of an outstanding contribution to Music Award at the Brits, and a whole new generation of synth poppers who owe them a debt of gratitude. I caught up with them this week and asked quite what they've noticed that's changed over the past 25 years.
We are people who follow our own instincts and even our own whims, for better or for worse. And we've not learned not to do that.
Uh-huh.
In a sense, it doesn't matter what we've learned in the last 25 years. We are the Pet Shop Boys and that's what we do.
And has the way of making music changed for you over that time?
The process of writing the songs is pretty much the same. In many ways, it's easier because the technology is far more instant and, you know, you can get an idea down really quickly. It's not, you don't have that frustrating thing where it doesn't work and doesn't sync up. You know, you can actually do it all in the one laptop almost anywhere, you know. So making the records, well, you know, we always work with a producer as well and you work differently with different producers. Quite often, though, a lot of it's based on the demos that we've made to begin with.
With the advent of the technology you're talking about, that it's something you find yourself embracing?
Well, actually, you know, I don't think we would have even existed before the technology made it possible for the Pet Shop Boys to exist, because we would never have, you know, recruited other members to be in the band. It's always a duo. It was always us doing everything. We are a group that exists because of the technology, because of drum machines and emulators and things like that. When the sampler came along, which was when we were starting, you know, you could play orchestras and choirs and all, you know, all these kind of things that would have been very difficult to do beforehand. And so we've always embraced the newest forms of making music, just simply because, well, first, it's exciting. And whenever you get something new, it gives you a new impetus. You know, it's always exciting when you get a new keyboard, for instance. You think, oh, great, got a new keyboard. New sounds give you new ideas. And, you know, so using the technology and the fact that technology is always changing keeps an interest in the whole songwriting process.
How would you describe Yes musically?
We think it's a bit like a greatest hits record because it has the first half that we deliberately structured it, so it's one song after another. Johnny Marr, who plays in it, we sent him the finished copy, and he said, it's great, the songs just keep on coming. And that's what it's like. It's a and the beat goes on concept. That's what we wanted to have, was to have very, very, very strong melodic songs with strong ideas, just one after the other. And we wanted it as Xenomania because we wanted it to be electro-pop all the way through. So there's a linking sound. When you work with several producers, that can work really well because you can work in different styles and achieve them, you know, perfectly. But maybe the album doesn't hang together. Like Bedtime Stories by Madonna, which I think is an underrated album, doesn't really hang together in that way because it's all different producers. And this album really, really hangs together. In fact, on the second half of the album, if it was a vinyl album, it would be a real side one, side two album. Side two would be a totally different record. It would start with the song Building a Wall, which is immediately an unusual song. It's got Chris and I talking on it, or shouting on it, really, in fact. And on side two, if we call it that, you get the slightly more experimental side. On the song Legacy, we were trying deliberately in the studio to write a different kind of melody that's not really a pop melody, mm-hmm. that uses unusual intervals. And it was actually quite difficult to sing. I couldn't get my head around the melody. Although people, it probably sounds really easy now, but in fact, the melody is really quite unusual. That car from Windhouse Boy has been on the phone. He wants to upgrade the mobile you own. Your computer's a spy. Give him a ring. He'll explain why. The bourgeoisie.
It's almost like a list of reeling off a lot of different items, some of which are climate change, other which are high-speed rail links.
Yeah.
They all seem to be relative or of a par. It seemed like almost like a kind of conclusion of this immersion in a consumer culture, which you talk about in Beautiful People and things like that. You're almost lost and there's no sense of priority anymore.
Well, actually, that's sort of what it's about, really. I went on my computer, I had an entire list of different ideas for songs, and in fact, I just decided to string them together, and so it was a bit nonsensical. And then I got an idea from it. It started, That's It, The End. And I suddenly realised that That's It, The End was Tony Blair's last words to the House of Commons. And I also had an idea of calling a song Legacy, and that comes from all these politicians talk about their legacy, this very narcissistic thing they do. And so I just had this idea of politics now, or any time when a politician leaves power or gets thrown out of power, they normally leave power haunted by something. Think of big politicians, Nixon, Thatcher, Blair, Bush, Clinton, because Clinton, fortunately, it's a sex thing. They leave power and they're always haunted by something in a way that maybe John Major isn't, for instance, because he was elected and then just left, you know. And there's Churchill. Was it Churchill who said that every political career ends in failure? It wasn't Churchill, but it was true whoever said it. It was Enoch Powell, I think. It fascinates the idea that you're so high and then you're just at a normal level of life. There was a great bit in that film about Mrs. Thatcher on the television the other week where she suddenly realises she's going to get chucked out and she says, what am I going to do? And really, you could start the whole of this, you could play that bit of the film, what am I going to do? And then go, that's it, the end. And so I went through the thing that you're quite right about, modern issues, the high-speed trains and all the rest of it. And then suddenly it goes back in time to, there's a cruiser waiting at Scarpa Flow, the idea of someone being taken into exile. The Pilgrimage of Grace is violence. It's like there's violence in the north of England. And all time gets mixed up. And then it's like a dream, really. And then you come back to reality with the phone rings. It's a boy from the car phone warehouse saying, do you want to upgrade your phone? And it's like, that's what you've got to deal with now. And the sort of panic having to deal with normal life and not all this high politics and foreign affairs that you've assumed as your life. Why one writes a song about that is a funny thing, because most people wouldn't. But for some reason, politics interests me like that. I find it quite inspiring.
The new wave of synth pop, I'd like to ask you about. You know, you played with some of these acts in your Brit medley. There was also a lot of acts from La Rue to Little Boots and various others, and perhaps starting with Hot Chip a few years ago, influencing popular music and being very successful. Do you see any lineage with acts like this? Do you listen to them?
We're very aware of Hot Chip. I think we played a few festivals with them. I'm aware of Little Boots, probably through YouTube. Quite like that keyboard she's got.
Well, the Tenorion, the kind
that,
of little...
that Yamaha thing. Yeah. Of course, can't copy her, so that's, she's got that really, hasn't she? That's hers. So, yeah, we're definitely aware of what's going on. And we're aware that Brandon described Human as being like Pet Shop Boys and Johnny Cash. And I can kind of hear that. Was it Johnny Cash? Mm. Yeah, I can hear that. But I don't know how much influence we are. We just felt that what we were doing now is probably more relevant than it had been at the height of Manchester and all of that.
Brit pop. And Neil, what do you find yourself listening to in terms of new music?
I listen to new pop songs. It's not that new anymore. Lady Hawk, probably just the singles rather than... Quite rare for me to listen to whole albums, actually.
You're joining the playlist generation.
I have got very playlisty. So I have playlists like new pop, new classical. Ooh. I've got a new one I really like, New Quiet.
What is the New Quiet?
New Quiet's got... do you know that Norwegian trumpeter called Arve Hendriksen?
I'm afraid I don't know.
Well, he plays with effects and kind of ambient music, and he's beautiful. I like the trumpet. I saw him quite by chance play a concert in St. Martin the Fields Church a couple of years ago, and it was really brilliant. And of course, I listened to, as I said, new classical. I like electronic ambient music. Like, we ended up doing that record with Sam Taylor Wood for Compact. I love the Compact label, particularly the pop ambient range they do. A lot of pop music, I just listen to their hits. I think their hits, they've got something going for them, really. Like Sex on Fire by Kings of Leon, I didn't get it first. And then suddenly I was in a shop and I thought, oh, what's this record I really like? And it was Sex on Fire. And that's, I always think that's a great way of consuming pop music, where you just hear it in shops and things and you think, oh, I like this record. Why is it again? He realizes it's been in the charts about 3 years. Because I can look down the list of iTunes top pop 75 or something. I don't really like any of these records very much. But that doesn't mean I don't listen to lots of new music. But what I think what I listen to tends to be quite obscure.
I think on that note of downbeat misery, we shall
absolutely
get an end to proceedings.
Well, it's getting late, isn't it?
It's getting late. I mean, it's about 3:45 or something like that. You probably need a nap. That was Neil Tennant, mainly, and Chris Lowe, a bit, of the Pet Shop Boys, and Yes is out on March 23rd. And especially for you, we've put the full, unexpurgated version of our interview with the Pet Shop Boys up as a Music Weekly extra, which you can find in the usual places. You can also read an interview with them in text form by Johnny Marr, who contributes a lot of guitar work to this album in the Observer Music Monthly, which is out on Sunday. Now, Rosie, if you had to run a feature right now, a feature so inimitable it refuses even to have a name, what would you do?
I think I'd get Tim Jones to talk about his love of sophisticated 80s pop band The Blue Nile.
Your wish is our command.
I first heard of The Blue Nile in the mid-90s when a music magazine listed them in a 10 most depressing albums you'll ever hear style feature. Being an angst-ridden teen hooked on Nick Drake and Joy Division, they sounded like they'd be right up my street. But when I bought their album Hats, I felt cheated. It seemed to be made up of the kind of cheesy, slick 80s music I'd learned to avoid at all costs. Yet something must have struck me because I persevered with it, and as I've grown older, Hats has become one of my favourite records. Formed in Glasgow at the start of the 80s and still together now, it's fair to say that the Blue Nile aren't rock's most productive band. In almost three decades, they've put out just four albums. Comprising Paul Buchanan, Robert Bell and Paul Joseph Moore, their original compositions were so lush, especially back in 1981, that a hi-fi manufacturer, Lynn Electronics, released their records, apparently seeing their music fit to demonstrate their kit. Oh, soon became apparent was that, unlike the most garish of 1980s acts, the Blue Nile weren't all about being flash for the sake of it. Rather, they injected their state-of-the-art sound with intelligence and emotion. Solitary guitar twangs, lonely piano lines, and the use of empty space helped conjure up the feeling of melancholy and loneliness. It was music as painting, recreating in sound images of rain-swept streets, lonely bedsits, and desolate city centres, something that was perhaps most beautifully captured in Let's Go Out Tonight. Buchanan's soulful vocals and stark lyrics work hand in hand with his wonderful music, hitting you firmly in the gut with an emotional impact few other acts could manage. Who, for instance, can forget the climax of Downtown Lights when Buchanan breaks down and agonisingly sings, "I'm tired of crying on the stairs." Adult pop is often a dirty word, but the Blue Nile approached their music with subtlety and grace, meaning it could tap into the complex love tangle feelings you began to experience as you left your teenage years behind and entered into the world of being a proper grown-up. And over time, I realised that the magazine I'd read was indeed right. Hats was one of the most depressing albums I owned, and for all the right reasons.
Was our Tim Stir the Man About Town on the Blue Nile, and that's just about it for this week. We've got new friends on Facebook: Ronan McKegney, Lawrence Hamburger, brilliant name, Paris Hitton, minus the L, Thomas Brown, Buster Bennett, Abigail Lingford, Errol Walls, Luigi Monteferranti, Jim Martin and Helen Birch. Don't forget you can post your views on the show, on our guests, the Pet Shop Boys and Fever Ray, on the singles, anytime, day or night, at Guardian/Music Weekly, or by looking up Music Weekly in Facebook. That, however, is it for this week. We'll be back from next Friday, but until then, it's goodbye from Rosie.
Goodbye.
And it's hello from me. Goodbye.